fresh in my mind. If I'd been alone at the church last night? That's a weird thought. I can't imagine me dead. I look around and up, as far as I can tell him by myself. Christian can't be spying on me all the time. So, like, if I leave, nobody will know I'm not always a superhero. If I stay and something bad happens to me, well, my heart could stop, and there'd be nobody around to save me. Wussy girl, get your cool back. I just disgusted myself. I don't walk away, and I don't need backup. Never have. A superhero isn't something you play at sometimes. It's something you are. Full time, all the time, every day. I flip back my long coat, liking the crisp leathery sound it makes. Draw my sword, and turn the corner, ready for action. My sword frosts white, and my fingers get stiff with an instant chill. In the middle of the street is one of those fancy cars Mac likes so much, totally iced, glittering diamond-crusted in the sunlight. An iced arm is sticking out the open window on the driver's side. A dude is hanging half out of the passenger side, like he tried to climb out or something, mouth open on a scream, eyes closed, fist up in the air like he was trying to fight something off. No kids. That's a relief. Looks like only two casualties this time. That's another relief. I study it, absorbing the details. This scene's not so cold. Brutal, but nothing like the church or the subclub at Chester's. More like the laundry scene. I figure, being outside, the frosted vignettes warm up faster. Piece of cake. I take a couple of deep breaths, locking everything down on my mental grid, psyching myself up to freeze frame in. Just as I've nearly got it perfect, right exactly when I've almost got everything snapped into precise place, and I'm preparing to shift gears, smooth and easy, folks start shouting behind me and guns start going off. Bullets can hurt me. I'm not that superhero. It spooks me and I startle into freeze frame before I mean to. That's even more dangerous than leading with your head. I blast off wild and try to get control of myself, but it's hard to do once I'm moving so fast. I whirl dizzyingly like a drunken Tasmanian devil and smash into the side of the iced car. It knocks me out of freeze frame, but either doesn't catch me so much by surprise this time, or the cold isn't as deadly as it was in the church, or a little of both, because I managed to shove myself right back up into freeze frame almost as fast as I dropped down. I can't get my feet under control, though, because I didn't get off on the right foot to begin with, and I slam into the car again, and this time the people inside it blow like supercharged grenades into a gazillion shards of ice, and I get sprayed by icy pink shrapnel. Diamond-hard splinters of frozen flesh pierce every inch of my exposed skin. A thick dagger of ice as big around as a hot dog punctures my jeans and sinks into my thigh, and another impales my shoulder. I get knocked out of freeze frame again and push myself back up, and when I do, the ice splinters shove deeper into my body from the pressure of how fast I'm moving, and it hurts so feckin' bad that I drop back down instantly without thinking. Reflexive. Just trying to stop the pain. I start to freeze to death. I push back up. Ow! Shit! Shit, shit! Oh, it hurts! Down, I'll die. Up, I'll only wish I would. I stay in freeze frame, stumble into the stupid car again, bounce back, careen off another car, and give it everything I've got in a violent effort to get out of the cold zone. I can't feel my hands. I can't feel my feet. Fuck, I can't believe I did this. Who was yelling and why were they shooting? I push, push, push with all my might. I collapse face down in the street. Ice daggers bite deep. But I don't care. I'm out. I'm back around the corner where it's warm enough to live. I made it. At least the hundreds of splinters in me will melt now. Either they're already starting to, or I'm bleeding a lot because something warm and wet is trickling all over my skin. I'm out of immediate mortal danger. I won't freeze to death. Now I just have to worry about bleeding to death. It takes me three tries to manage to roll over on my back, and by the time I get there, I'm panting worse than I do when I'm freeze-framed for an hour and shaking like a leaf. There's blood in my eyes. I try to blink it away. Dude, that was a grand debacle. How embarrassing. Glad nobody saw it. I assess my situation without moving. I'm severely cut up. My skin burns where I can feel myself. The biggest threats to my survival are the holes in my thigh and shoulder, or what will be holes when the ice finishes melting. I'll need to get them bandaged fast. The problem is I can't feel my hands. I close my eyes, trying to focus on moving my fingers. Nothing happens.
Danny.
I look up to see Inspector Jane bending over me. I've never been gladder to see him in my whole life.
You've certainly done it now, haven't you?
Candy. B-b-b-bar. I manage. He smiles, but it doesn't reach his eyes. In my... I trail off. I don't even have the energy to say pocket. I give him a longing, starving look, and I know he gets the picture. He looks across me. I realize I'm surrounded by guardians. Good, they can carry me to Chester's and help me get patched up.
Have you got it?
Jane says.
Got it, Captain.
I go ice cold in a way that has nothing to do with cars or frozen people. I try to lunge to my feet, but succeed only in flopping on the pavement like a beached fish. Don't you... There.
It's been 6 days, Danny.
6 days? How long did I sleep at Chester's?
You should have come. If you'd kept your word, I might have continued trying to put up with it. But I won't allow the fate of our city to rest in whimsical hands. The sword is ours now, for the good of Dublin. We take far more of them off the streets than you do. In time, you'll understand it always should have been this way.
You...
Don't try to take it back. Your first warning is your final one. I won't treat you like a child if you do.
Kill you. I explode. I still can't feel my hands or feet, but I feel my head. It's about to explode. He has no right. It's my sword.
Don't make it war, Danny. You won't win.
I try to tell him he'd better kill me right here and now, because there's no way they can keep my sword from me. I'll take it back the second I'm on my feet again. There's no place on earth. Feck, there's no place in all of heaven or hell that'll ever be safe for me again. But I'm too light-headed to talk. Dizzy. My vision's getting weird.
She's awful bloody, Captain. She gotta live. She's tough.
Jane says.
Maybe I should do something. We can't help her. Not even a little, or she'll be able to take it back.
I flop on the pavement, unable to do a thing to stop them. I'm vulnerable, completely at his mercy. And he's not having any. I won't have any for him when the time comes. He's leaving me here, to live or die on my own. I'll never forgive. I'll never forget. They walk away. Just like that, they leave me in the middle of a dirty street, like a dog that got hit by a car, bleeding and helpless and alone. Dead if another car comes along. I'll remember that, too, when I see him again. Dude, they could have at least moved me to the sidewalk, balled up a shirt or something for a pillow beneath my head. Something really bad happens to me then. Worse even than everything that's already happened to me in the past few days. I feel woozy and strange, and all of a sudden it's like I'm outside of my body, watching me. But the me lying in the street has long blonde hair and is looking up at the red-headed me with tears in her eyes and telling me she can't die yet because she's got people to protect. She's got a sister named Mac back home in Georgia, and she just left her a message. And if she dies, Mac will come over to hunt her killer because she's stubborn and idealistic, and she'll die too. But I don't seem to be able to feel anything about what's happening, and none of it seems real. So I walk away, just like Jane did. My stomach heaves and I puke my guts out right there in the middle of the street. I can't even get on my hands and knees to do it. Lying on my back, I get sick all over myself. Not the blonde-haired me that's the ghost of Alina, but the real, red-haired Danny that's really lying in the street, wondering if she's going to bite it this time. And if there's something wet on my face that isn't blood or vomit. No, ain't. Eventually, I get the feeling back in my hands and feet. I guess they thaw. I fumble for a candy bar. I curl in a ball in the street and eat every candy bar I've got and plot revenge. Don't make it war, he said. And I won't. I don't have to. He already did.
18. I can be your hero, baby. I find her stumbling through the streets, bleeding to death. If not for all that hair, I might not have recognized her. She's covered with blood. It's on her clothes, matted in her curls, crusted on her face. Her long coat is flayed and hangs in tatters from her shoulders. It looks like she went through a dicer. I don't see her sword anywhere. I look around, nothing shiny in the streets but her. I roar, and she clamps her arms around her head and falls to her knees, and I remember how much noise I'm capable of making and kick myself. I deafened a human woman I recently had sex with. I broke her arm, too. I didn't mean to. I can't get used to what's happening to me. Try living your whole life one way, then abruptly being something else. It's not easy to remember what you are every single bloody fucking second. Except enraged. That I'm aware of all the time. It never diminishes. Never stops. The blackouts where I lose chunks of time are getting more frequent. Lasting longer. She topples in the street. I throw myself from the roof, land on the balls of my feet, and gather her in my arms. Where was I when she needed me? Fucking another faceless woman, trying to defuse the constant lust. She feels so slight against my chest. I'm not surprised to feel myself trembling. I'm touching my goddess. Och, lass, what have you done to yourself now? I push hair from her face. There's so much blood that I can't see what's causing it. How is she even walking? It makes me crazy that she's in this city, without a guardian or consort, always getting into trouble. I want to lock her up somewhere I can keep her safe forever. Someplace white and shining and beautiful, where nothing ever goes wrong. Her brain has more muscles than her body, and less sense. Her passion for life pushes her limbs further than they were meant to go. She's going to burn herself to ash if she doesn't find someone or something that takes her all the way down to ground zero and recharges her. She needs to crash as hard as she lives, or she'll die young. I can't stand the thought of her dying. If I knew how, I would make her fey, so she would never die. It doesn't matter that I hate being it myself, or that she would too. Immortality is immortality. I run with her, careful to move easy. I take her where I've pictured her 1,000 times, but knew better. I still know better. I'm doing it anyway. Just one time before I turn into the villain of this piece. Just one time before I become the fourth and final Unsullied Prince. I want to be her Highlander. And her hero. She'll remember. When there's nothing else left of me worth remembering.
I can't wait till I grow up enough that I stop having superhero growing pains. Waking up confused and cross all the time sucks. My hair is in my face, and it makes me so mad for a sec that I almost tear it out at the scalp, trying to get it out of my eyes. And it's matted. Then my bracelet gets stuck in it, and there's something crusty. Ew! I say irritably. Then somebody else has their hands in my hair, trying to gently disentangle my wrist from my hair. Who? What? Where? I'm always doing a mental check when I first wake up, trying to remember what happened before I fell asleep, so I can connect to where I am and how I got there. When I first got run of the Abbey, dude, like a million times bigger than my cage with Mom, I was constantly knocking myself out, because I couldn't get over how far and fast I was able to run. And giddiness made me a freeze frame and train wreck. I'm never real sure when I first wake up if I went to sleep or just managed to brain myself unconscious again. Then that fecker rioted and knocked me out too, And now I have to add that into my worries when awake. Memory slams me upside the head. I get so mad I yank my bracelet off my head, along with a good chunk of hair, and feel frantically for my sword, even though I know it's not at my hip, or anywhere else. A man curses. My eardrums vibrate painfully, and my head feels like it might split. I open my eyes. Christian knew it! I shove my hair out of my face and look up. I'm lying in bed, and he's sitting next to me, looking down at me. Something's different. He doesn't look quite so scary. I take that back. Yes, he does. But either I'm getting better at reading his expressions, or he's getting better at making them, because there's like an ounce of remorse in his iridescent eyes. Dude, his eyes are full fey now. They weren't last time I saw him.
Sorry, lass, but I almost had the bracelet free. You tore some of your hair out. You might have waited a second longer.
He picks up the thatch of hair I yanked out at the root and flattens it straight between his fingers. Curl springs back instantly.
Stubborn as the head it came from,
he murmurs. Then he does the weirdest thing. He puts it in his pocket. Maybe the dude collects hair. I got bigger worries on my mind. He took my sword. The fucker actually took my sword. I can't believe it. I have no way to kill my enemies. I could hunt them all day long and do a great big fat nothing with them when I catch them. It makes me so nuts I can't stand it. I try to push up from the bed, but my legs aren't 100%.
Who took your sword?
Inspector Jane. I'm going to kill him.
He did this to you!
I get an instant migraine, flop down, cover my head with my arms and burrow beneath the pillows. He sighs so loud I still hear it, even with my ears covered.
Sorry, lass. Did he?
I'm not taking my hands from my ears. I think about telling him yes so he'll go after Jane for me, but I don't like to lie unless the payoff is huge. Lies are horny little buggers. They breed like rabbits and bound around just as insanely, and then you have to try to keep track of them. I got caught up myself, but it's his fault. He startled me and I freeze framed too soon. Speaking of cuts, I don't feel as bad as I did, and I don't seem to be bleeding anymore.
You want help killing him?
He sounds a little too eager. Like homicidal maniac eager. Don't need no stinking help, I say crossly. My eardrums hurt. I mean, not that your help is stinking or anything. Your help is totally cool. I just want to do it myself.
Would you come out from under there, lass?
Would you, like, never yell again? You're slaying me. I got super hearing. I poke my head out. Where am I? I'm in a cloud of down pillows and comforters, in a high bed in the corner of a huge room.
My place.
I look around. Cool digs. He's holed up in a rehabbed industrial warehouse, one of those kinds with a giant living area that has no walls, except for the ones you make with furniture and stuff. There's lots of brick and wood floors and exposed heating ducts. Tons of light spilling in tall windows, and a massive flat-screen 3D TV in front of a ginormous, comfy-looking couch. There's a pool table, and some old video game machines, and an awesome bar, a kitchen with stainless steel appliances, and no racks or torture instruments visible anywhere. It's just the kind of place a college guy would die for. Too bad he's not one anymore. But hey, we all have things we need to pretend. No scary-looking knife collections. No red, no black. Their favorite colors. The place is totally not on Sealy Prince. A shaft of rosy light is shining on me and I look up. The bed is under a skylight. The sun's setting and it's got one of those new, strange, fey hues to it. Brilliant orangey pink. I could sprawl in bed and watch the stars at night. I like it being pushed in the corner, giving me wall at my right and back, leaving only two sides to defend. Feels snug. Makes me think about rearranging some of my own rooms. I'm fascinated by the way other folks live and love to look in other people's houses. Oh, man, you ever move out, I'm moving in.
Like it, do you, lass?
He says, and his voice sounds funny, thick and weird. I look down at him and jerk. Something on my face. He's staring at me hard, eyes intense, and what's looking out of them doesn't look like it belongs in this place of brick and wood and sunshine at all. It belongs in the dark somewhere, with razor blades, about to do something real nasty.
No. Your face is lovely, lass. The sunset looks good on you.
He reaches a hand out toward my face, and I go real still. Dude, you're scaring me. He looks at me, but it's like he's not seeing me at all. So I sit there with his hand about an inch from my face and look back and think about wild animals. About how they'll attack if they smell fear. Not that I feel it, but when you're staring at an unseelie prince, even though you know he started out human, it's kind of hard to predict what might happen next. This isn't a scenario I can lock down on my mental grid and freeze frame through. This obstacle course has too many unknown variables. He drops his hand without touching me, pushes up from the bed and goes to the kitchen. He braces his fists on the island and leans there with his back to me. He's bigger than he was when I first saw him up on my water tower. The back of his shirt is stained with blood, and his spine presses knobby and weird against it. It's creepy. I scoot to the exit side of the bed, thinking I'd just be moseying along now, when I realize I'm not wearing enough to get up. I only got on a bra and underwear. I sink back down and tuck my knees up. Not that I want to draw attention to the fact, but looking around yields no results. Where are my clothes?
Destroyed.
He undressed me. He must have washed me too, because I'm not covered with blood. Holy high wire. An unseelie death by sex fae that's having all kinds of temper problems, undressed and cleaned me up. Do you like have any other clothes I could wear?
Don't use that tone with me.
What tone?
The one that thinks I'm some kind of freak predator that molests children. I'm not a freak, and you're not a child. I undressed you, lass. I cleaned you up. I healed you. I will never hurt you.
How did you heal me?
Fed you my blood.
My gag reflex is instant and uncontrollable. I retch dry and noisy. Unlike a lot of other folks I know, drinking blood doesn't sound cool to me at all. It grosses me out. Same with eating unseelie flesh. I've never done it, and never will. I'm staying an unseelie flesh virgin all my life. I'm not even tempted by the possibility that it could make me stronger and faster than I already am. Dude, you got to draw your lines in the sand somewhere and hold them. It's especially important when the sand keeps shifting beneath your feet.
It's potent. Works better than unseelie flesh. A few drops in your mouth and...
He turns around and smiles at me, I think. Tattoos rush beneath the skin of his face, shadowing the plains and valleys, making it hard to decide just what that twist of his lips means.
There's really only one question. Would you rather have died?
That's an easy one for me. I'd never rather that. Not under any circumstances. I'll take survival at any price. Always. No. Thanks for the blood, dude. Means a lot. I hate admitting this next part, but I'm pretty sure it's true. You saved my life. I won't forget it. I smile back at him. Then I just sit there trying not to gape at his reaction. He totally changes, and I see the Highlander he was. His eyes go brown and playful, and he looks college guy hunky again. The tattoos recede from his face. Even his muscles change, smooth, and suddenly his body is more human. He tosses me a candy bar. I catch it, rip it open and munch it, and begin making plans to get my sword back. I know, Jane. He knows if I survive, I'll come after it, so he'll take it somewhere he thinks I can't get to it. He won't want to waste too many of his men guarding it, because he wants them out on the street, fighting. I waste a couple of seconds trying to figure out where he'd take it, then realize I don't have to. All I have to do is spy on him, and follow him back to wherever he takes the fae he catches to be slaughtered. I can't believe he's so stupid he really thinks he'll be able to keep it.
Stay there. And I'll get you some clothes,
Christian says. He lopes off, moving long-limbed and easy, not gliding in the weird way the princes do. Down the other end of the long room, he rummages through an armoire and comes back with a pair of flannel PJ bottoms with a drawstring waist and a huge cream fisherman sweater. I suit up under the covers, tying off my waist tight and rolling up the legs and arms about 100 times. When he tosses me a pair of balled-up socks as he heads off to the kitchen, I'm distracted, still thinking about Jane, and miss them. They go sailing past me, hit the wall, and fall down in the crack. I roll over and reach down, rooting around for them. It takes me a second to figure out what I close my hand on. Hair. Attached to a head? There's a head in the narrow space between the bed and the wall. I freeze, totally horrified and massively grossed out. I jerk my hand back and just sit there, swallowing the creeped-out sound trying to claw its way out of my throat, then look over my shoulder at him. He's humming a weird song under his breath that sounds a lot like the music they play at Chester's, and disappearing into a pantry off the kitchen. I force myself to reach back down and pat around, never taking my eyes off the pantry door.
"I'm hungry, Christian,"
I call. When he answers, I can make a good guess at how deep the pantry is, how far in it he's gone, how much time I have to figure out what the fuck is going on here. The head has a neck attached to it, and sure enough, there's a body, too. It's naked and female, and human. She's stiff with rigor mortis and ice cold. I barely let myself breathe. I hear boxes being moved around on shelves.
"Sorry, lass. I'll have more for you in a second. I thought I had some Snickers in here, but so far I'm only finding Almond Joy."
I yank my hand out of the crack and scoot back to the middle of the bed. And when I answer him, I sound relaxed, playful.
"Ah, dude, keep looking. You know how I love my Snickers."
The boxes stop moving.
"Something wrong, lass?"
There's a dead woman wedged between Christian's bed and the wall. Normally, I'd say that's a whole lot of wrong, and I'd get real vocal about it. But I'm in the killer's apartment, wearing his PJs with no shoes, and I got no feckin' sword that kills Faye because that fecker Jane took it. So, I'm in no hurry to do that right now. There's no way I tipped him off. My delivery was perfect.
No, nothing. Just starving out here.
Another flawless lie. I may not do it often, but I shine at it like I do most things. He steps out of the pantry and looks at me. The Highlander is gone. He's full on Seely Prince, iridescent eyes tinged with crimson.
"Och, lass. Mac never told you, did she?"
"Told me what?"
"I'm a walking lie detector, Danny, my darling."
"Nobody is."
"It's inherited, like your she-seer gifts."
"Which I'm going to use to kick your ass from here to next week."
"And that was one big fat fuck of a lie. You found her, didn't you? I knew I should have put her away. But you were here and bleeding so much, and I needed her off the bed. Saving you was all that mattered."
"So you shoved her off the side of the bed and thought I wouldn't notice? You stuffed her in a crack?" My hands are fists. The ignominy of it. Dead and disposed of like a used condom. If I hadn't missed the socks, I'd never have known. I'd have left thinking Christian was wicked cool for saving me, and not been 1 ounce the wiser that I'd been in bed next to a dead woman, eaten and dressed without even seeing her 2 feet away. Dude, you are one sick feck."
"Och, Danny, my love,"
he says, gliding toward the bed.
"You've really no idea."
19. I'll stand alone. I kick up into freeze frame without even thinking. I don't lock one thing down on my mental grid. I hope I do a lot of damage, break everything I hit, and just don't knock myself out. Because I have a feeling if I do, I'll wake up strapped down to a rack with an insane ex-Highlander about to do seriously fecked up things to me. If he can sift, I'm dead meat. I make it to the door, but he's there in front of me, arms spread, crouched low, looking like he's about to bum-rush me and take me off my feet. His face is contorted with anger. Kaleidoscopic tattoos rush beneath his skin. His eyes are full black.
only thing that's missing to complete the Unseelie Prince picture is a radioactive torque and huge black wings spreading, getting ready to crush me in a deadly embrace. I backpedal frantically and he lunges. Then I'm on the floor and he's on top of me, and I know the second he hits me that Christian is so much stronger than me that I don't stand a chance of taking him. I can't believe the strength I feel in his body. The Unseelie part of him is kicked in with a vengeance. It's not just power oozing off him. He's turning into pure sex, just like the rest of them. I shake my head, trying to keep it clear. I think about horrible things, like the dead woman stuffed into the space between his bed and the wall, and how I don't want to end up like her. I'm flat on my back, and he's got my wrists, and he's stretching my hands above my head. I curse and struggle and kick, but it's like fighting a concrete wall. Nothing, and dude, I do mean nothing, seems to have any impact on him. I headbutt him. He laughs and drops his face into my shoulder and sniffs me. I bite his ear, try to tear it off his head. Blood fills my mouth, gagging me, and I let go.
Danny, Danny, Danny.
He says, like he doesn't even feel it.
Don't fight me. You don't need to fight me. I'll never hurt you. Not you. You're my brightest shining star.
I ain't nobody's bright shining nothing. He's a certifiable lunatic. Get off me! Up close, the death by sex fay part of him is doing wicked bad things to me. Things I don't like feeling. My mouth is dry, and I'm seeing those graphic images plastered inside my skull. Christian, naked, doing the things I seen rioting doing. And I want to watch, and I don't want to watch, and I have to get the feck out of here now. Can you even feel? Or are you as dead inside as that woman? Why did you even bother saving me? So you could kill me slower?
It's not like that. Would you hold still and listen to me for a second?
There's nothing you can say that matters.
It's hard to talk to you when I'm touching you.
Dude, quit sniffing me. That's just rude. Get off me!
I can't, you'll run.
If you really didn't kill her, you'll let me go. You'll trust me to come around. Give me room to breathe.
If I let you go, will you sit down and hear me out, lass?
He's relaxed since we're kind of negotiating, but he's a lie detector, and I know I can't answer that last question. So I take my best shot and knee him in the balls with everything I've got. There's no such thing as a dirty fight when you're fighting to win. He roars so loud my head just about blows apart. Then he's off me and curled in a ball, howling. I've made a few dudes before. Got two out there on the streets sometimes. Never seen one react so bad. I wonder if it's because he was hard as a rock when I hit him, so I had to twist really hard to get to his balls, and I came up on them from underneath and probably mashed his... Yeah, mega, now's a good time to run. I blow out the door so hard I blasted off the hinges. This morning when I left Chester's, after almost dying and coming back to life, I think it was this morning. I spent so much time unconscious lately that I'm never sure if I've been out for a few hours or a couple of days. I was trying to decide what to do with the rarity of a whole day of free time. But then I nearly got killed again. This time by exploding frozen people. Then Jane took my sword. Then I passed out from blood loss. Got cleaned up by an Unseelie prince and drank his blood. Found a dead woman practically in bed with me. And now I'm out on the streets again. And feck if it's not time for me to report to work again. I can't decide which of those things is the worst. Dude, sucky day. Free time, my ass. I barely survived it. I bounce from barefoot to barefoot, freeze-framing with all I've got, skinning up my heels something fierce, waiting for Christian to sift into the spot in front of me. Knowing if he does, I'm going so fast I'll knock myself out cold on him and probably wake up dead. Knowing I don't have the one weapon that would protect me from him because Jane took it. Mac has one, though. Bet I could take her. Way I see things, I got three options. Go to Chester's, use Riordan as a shield against Christian while making him help me get my sword back. Go straight after Jane myself, knowing Christian is hot on my heels. Go after Mac and take the spear. Barons might be in the way. Who am I kidding? Barons would definitely be in the way, And even if he wasn't and I took her spear, he'd come after me. Then I'd have Christian hunting me, rioting pissed at me for missing work, and barons breathing down my neck. A day in the life of me. The stuff I have to put up with. I'm always thinking things are as bad as they can get, and they get worse. I nearly crash into something in the street, one of those feckin' variables that move off my predicted grid, like people, animals, and fae.
Stay out of my way, human!
It hisses. I want to drop out of freeze frame and kick this monster's ass all the way to dead. I haven't seen her since the night Mac saved me from her, and forced her to give me back my good looks. I almost died that night, too. I almost die a lot. Superheroes do. You stay out of mine, you ugly old bitch! I hiss back at the gray woman. Then she's gone on her way, and me on mine. She's off to hunt and kill, and I've got an itch I can't scratch. My hand closes on nothing at my waist. I need my sword like I need to breathe. I detour into a sporting goods store, jam shoes on my feet, grab an oversized fleece pullover to pull on over my sweater, because it's feckin' cold for me, and dash off again, heading for my best shot at success. Trying to take on Jane and his men with Christian trying to kill me is a weak shot. I don't have any idea where he's taken my sword. There are times, like Riordan said, when Batman needs Robin. Well, I don't need Riordan, but he sure will make it easier. He can watch my back like Mac used to. I've got no time for pride. I want results, and I know how to get them. He's always telling me to ask. Tonight I'm asking. I feel naked without my sword. I feel exposed. It's throwing me all kinds of off balance, like I don't even know who I am anymore without it. When I blast into Riordan's office, I'm going a million miles a minute, feet and mouth. Every one of his dudes scowls at me on the way in, even Lore, and I have no idea why. Guess Riordan told them to be pissy to me or something. You never know what's coming next with him. I blurt out what happened with the frozen car and Jane and tell him how we have to go get my sword back, like, right now, like this very instant.
Drop down, kid,
he says without raising his head from his stupid paperwork.
You're messing up my office.
Papers are flying around his head. I drop down from hyper mode and he looks up. He's looking at me weird. Takes me a sec to figure it out. It's like he's looking at a stranger. One he doesn't like, and is thinking about killing. Why the feck is he mad at me?
You reek of Highlander. The whole club can smell him on you. You're wearing his clothes.
I don't think I've ever heard him talk so soft. Dude, who cares? Didn't you hear anything I said? Inspector Jane took my sword!
Explain why you're wearing his clothes.
Softer still. If I wasn't so hot with temper, I'd get a chill. I don't understand him. What does what I'm wearing have to do with anything that's actually, like, relevant? How could it possibly matter? I don't even understand why it registers. But I can tell by the look on his face, he's not budging until I explain. And if I don't get my sword back soon, I'm going to go crazy. I also know if I tell him Christian killed some woman, and I was next, he won't pay any attention to the problem of my sword. He'll go after Christian, when I need him to go after Jane. I'm not sure he can take Christian. Not with what he's turning into. But with my sword, I know I can. The explosion cut up my clothes. He gave me some of his.
You were together at the explosion.
He found me after.
And you changed in the street.
Huh? Stymied as me. This isn't where I expect the conversation to go at all.
Elucidate upon where you changed.
What the fuck does that have to do with anything?
Answer me.
I ducked into a convenience store. That's why they call them that. So they can be, like, convenient. His gaze shivers up and down me.
If ice splinters tore up your clothes so badly that you needed to change, I'd think your injuries would be greater.
I gape at him. Baffled. Somebody took my sword, and he wants to talk about what I'm wearing and where I got dressed, and that he doesn't think I look hurt bad enough? He healed me. I was bleeding a lot.
Holy hurry and hurricane. How'd you get next to me so fast?
Riordan isn't behind his desk anymore. He's standing practically on my toes. I didn't even see him move or feel a breeze or anything.
Give me some personal space.
He drops his head forward and smells me.
Healed you how?
What is the deal with everyone sniffing me? If Dancer starts doing it too, I'm so out of here.
I drank his blood. Got a problem with that?
Three.
Huh?
I have three problems with that.
That was a rhetorical question. Maybe you can't hear me talking or something, so I'll say it again. Jane has my fucking sword. I'm in deep shit without it and need it back. You going to do something or not?
Just like that, he's back behind his desk, head bent over his paperwork, all but ignoring me.
No.
I'm incredulous. What? Why? You know I'll go after it myself. Is that what you want?
Jane stopped by a few hours ago.
That took a feckin' lot of nerve. He left me for dead. In the middle of a street. Wouldn't even give me a fucking candy bar. Did he tell you how bad off I was? Why didn't you come help me?
You look fine to me.
Whose side are you on?
He told me why he took the sword and agreed not to kill any Fae within 5 blocks of my club. That's more than you do.
Why would he agree to that? Jane hates all the Fae.
He knew you'd come to me and ask me to help you get it back.
And you're on his side? How dare Jane predict my moves and avert them while I'm busy dying and then being chased by a homicidal maniac? All of which was his fault to begin with.
Truth is, kid, I prefer you without it.
Why?
You can't kill my patrons. And now maybe you'll start exercising caution, or at least learn how to spell it.
I glare at his bent head. I'm asking for your help here, boss. You keep telling me to, and I'm asking.
I also said how you treat me is how I'll treat you.
What am I doing wrong?
The answer is no.
You've got to be kidding me. I tap my foot hyper fast, hoping maybe I'll crack his stupid floor. He doesn't say anything, just keeps working on whatever it is he works on. You know what, dude? If you don't help me get my sword back, you and me are through. You solve the ice mystery yourself. I bluff, not about to give it up. I'm not working for you. You don't help me, I don't help you.
Joan.
He doesn't even raise his head, just murmurs her name. I don't care if you keep boinking her. Just get me my sword back. And don't be making any more deals with folks about me behind my back.
That's not our arrangement. You signed a contract. Joe's life is only one of many prices should you renege. There are repercussions for your actions. You can't walk away from me, Danny. Not tonight. Not ever. You're not the one calling the shots. Sit down.
He's standing again, and again I didn't see him move. He kicks a chair at me.
Now.
Sometimes I think everybody else in the world knows something I don't know. Like they're all in on some kind of conspiracy. And if I just knew that one secret thing too, the things adults do that baffle me would make perfect sense. Other times, I think I know something extra that the whole rest of the world doesn't know, and that's why nothing they do makes sense. 'Cause they don't know it, and all their actions stem from flawed logic, unlike mine. I told Mac that once, and she said it wasn't something everyone else knew. The missing ingredient was that I didn't yet understand my own emotions. They were new, and I was just learning them for the first time. She said I was never factoring other people's feelings into things, so of course everything grown-ups did seemed mysterious and weird. I said, "Dude, you just said I don't understand them, so how can I factor them in?" She said, "You can't. So just accept that teenage years are a great big clusterfuck of insecurity and confusion and hunger. Try to survive them without getting yourself killed." Hey, feckin' men to that. Except for the insecurity part. Well, without my sword, plus the insecurity part. As soon as I sit down, Riordan says,
"Get out of here."
"Bipolar much?"
"Go take a shower and change your clothes."
"I don't smell that bad," I say crossly. He writes something, then turns the page in whatever the heck stupid thing he's reading. Dude, where do you want me to go? I can't go anywhere without my sword. I can't outrun the sifters. Every fae in your club has a hard-on for killing me. You want me dead? Just do it yourself and get it over with. He stabs a button on his desk.
Laura, get in here.
Laura blows in like he was plastered to the other side of the door.
Escort the kid to clean the fuck up and get that stench off her.
Sure thing, boss.
He scowls at me. I scowl right back. Laura points through the glass floor.
See that blonde down there with the big tits? I was about to get laid.
One, I'm too young to hear that kind of stuff. And two, I don't see you carrying a club to knock her over the head with, so how are you going to accomplish that? Behind me, Riordan laughs.
You're ruining my night, kid.
Ditto. Ain't life at Chester's grand. 20. I've got soul, but I'm not a soldier.
I am not the Shisadu cat. He has tricked all of you. You will need me to save you.
Each night, Cruz has taken me into the dreaming. He has made the same claim. His lies hold the polish and consistency of truth. If my emotional empathy works on Faye, a test I've not yet had the opportunity to perform to my satisfaction, I get such conflicting signals from him that my gift is of no avail. Now, wide awake after another night of diabolical dreams, I pass through double doors, 100 feet tall, several feet thick, with unfathomable tonnage, but do not afford them a second glance. My eyes are only for him. It does not seem odd to me we cannot close such doors. The oddity is that we were ever able to open them. Tiny mortals, tampering with chariots of the gods. I find myself in the position the Mian twins recently occupied, hands fisted on the glowing bars of Cruz's cage, staring in at the iced vision. He is war, divisiveness, brutality, heinous crimes against humanity. As an event on the battlefield, and the personification of it in a cage, he is all that and more. How many humans fell before the murderous hooves of this sly horseman of the apocalypse? Nearly half the world's population, by last count. Cruz brought down the walls between our races. If not for him, it would never have happened. He arranged the players, nudged them where and when necessary, set the game in motion, then galloped about the board in the guise of an avenging angel, agitating here and stirring up there until World War III began. I should not be here with him. Yet I am. I told myself white lies as I made my way beneath the abbey, deep into our hidden city, picking through a misleading maze of corridors and crypts and dead-end and pigtailing tunnels. I told myself I must ascertain the cage is secure, and he is still in it, that I will see him and realize he is but a pale imitation of my dreams, that I will gaze upon him and scoff at the thrall in which his dream self holds me, that somehow coming down to check on him might set not him, but me, free. My knees tremble. Desire parches my mouth and thickens my tongue. There is no freedom for me here. This close to him, I long to strip where I stand, dance wildly around his cage and keen the notes of an inhuman melody I do not even know how I know. This close to him, I must bite my tongue to prevent myself from moaning with need. This close to him, I feel like an animal. I stare at my hands on the bars, pale and white, with slender fingers clutching the glowing columns, and in my mind's eye I can only see them wrapped around that part of Cruz that has made of me an adulteress, curled as they were last night, and the night before, and the night before. I see the curve of my lips as I smile. I see the soft roundness of my mouth as I take him inside it. I find my fingers dancing lightly over the pearl buttons of my blouse and snatch them away. I see a shameful vision of my girls discovering their new grand mistress cavorting naked around Cruz's cage. It is erotic. It is horrific.
Freedom terrifies you, because you never permit yourself any.
Cruz said last night in my dreams.
I am not the only one in a cage. The shame you feel is not about me, but that you know you stand in a cage too. And it is of your own making. You have felt the darkest emotions of others since you were a child. You know what monsters crouch inside them, and you confuse your passions with their monsters. They are not the same, my beloved cat. Not the same at all.
He says I repress passion, that I do not permit myself to feel any of it. He says my love for Sean is a lie, that I seek comfort and safety and do not know what love is. He says I choose Sean because he too feels no passion. He says we are not running toward each other in love, but away from things in fear.
Set yourself free,
he says.
Come to me. Choose me.
God help me. I walk in a valley of darkness and I need your light to guide me. I unwrap my hands and back away. I must never come here again. I will build a blockade of mental tricks in my mind, as I did when I was young and needed to protect myself from the wild, hurtful emotions of my family. As I turn away, I hear a noise so small I nearly overlook it. I don't want to turn back. It is nearly impossible for me to force myself to leave this place. Yet I turn. I am the Grand Mistress here. The cavernous chamber, lit by a skein of torches on the walls, appears empty. There is nothing in it but a stone slab, Cruz's cage, and me. If I share this chamber with another, they are either behind the slab or on the far side of his cage, hiding, quiet, waiting for me to leave. Cognizant of my position at the Abbey, I avert my gaze from the Iced Prince and sedately walk the circumference of his cage, head straight, shoulders squared. I turn the corner. Marjorie, I say. She is directly opposite where moments ago I stood. Had she made no sound, I would have left none the wiser. Cat. Hostility buffets me in hot waves. The emotions of others have temperature and color, and when intense, texture as well. Marjorie is red, fevered, and complexly crafted as a honeycomb, with hundreds of tiny deceits and angers and resentments tucked into each small nook. I know a thing about resentment. It is a poison you drink yourself, expecting others to die. I've been classifying emotions into categories all my life. Navigating the hearts of those around me is a minefield. There are people I stand near a single time and skirt forevermore. Marjorie's emotions are deeply conflicted, dangerous. I wonder if I could feel my own, I would also be hot, red, a honeycomb of lies and resentment. But I do not want to lead. My soul is crying. I was wondering if we overlooked something about the grid, she says. I fear he's not securely contained. As was I. As do I. Great minds. She offers a tight smile. Her hands clench the bars, white-knuckled. I do not add the cued think alike, because she and I do not. She hungers for power. I long for simplicity. I would have made a fine fisherman's wife, in a cottage by the sea with 5 children, cats and dogs. She would make a grand Napoleon. We assess each other warily. Does he visit her? Does he make love to her? I cannot ask if she is dreaming of him. And if that is what has brought her down here on this rainy, cold morning. Whether she is or not, she will claim she is not, then tell the entire Abbey that I am being corrupted and must be replaced. She will use anything against me to take control of the Abbey. At the very core of my first cousin, Marjorie Annabel Bean McLaughlin, is a great, sucking need. It was there when we were children, playing together. and she broke the knees of my dolls and stole small treasures from me. I've never understood it. I observe her white knuckles. She clenches the bars of his cage as if she is squeezing the life from something. Your thoughts? She moistens her lower lip, looks as if she's about to speak, then stops. I wait, and after a moment she says, What if the king took the book? I mean, took it from Cruz before he iced him. Do you think that's possible? I say, as if it's a perfectly reasonable question. As if I don't know in that instant we are both being fed the same lies. She looks at Cruz, then back at me. Her eyes are billboards, advertising her emotions. She regards Cruz with tender, private communion. She looks at me as if I could not possibly begin to understand the first thing about her, him, or the world we live in. You are not gifted, she hissed at me when we were nine, and she heard her parents praising me for saving the family from a traitor in the endless plots and plans and betrayals that were our life. My parents used to take me to business meetings with Dublin's seediest and watch me carefully to see who made me most uncomfortable. You are cursed and flawed, and no one is ever going to love you. All these years later, I see the same taunt in her eyes. Oh, yes, he is attending her nightly, too. I am not only an adulteress, I am a cheap one. I shape that realization into a brick around my heart and slather it with mortar so it is ready for the next brick I can use. It will be in his way when he comes tonight. My Sean will be in bed beside me. She shrugs. Perhaps we don't know what really happened down here that night. What if the king tricked us? Why would he do that? I say. How could I presume to divine his motives? I need to know how deep her corruption goes. Are you thinking perhaps we should free Cruz? A hand floats to her chest as if in alarm. Do you think we should? A crafty gleam enters her eye. Do you know how? She has always been weaker than me. He is merely a blacker stain in her already corrupt blood. I think we need to figure out how to get the grid the Unseelie King created back up and functioning. I think the chamber should be filled with concrete, the grid reactivated, the doors closed, and the entire city beneath our abbey filled with lead. I nearly stagger from the crippling fury of her emotional reply, although her lips shape sweetly the lie. You are right, Katerina. As always, as everyone knows, you are right. I offer my hand, and she takes it as she did when we were children, lacing our fingers together. When we jumped rope, she would always pull it short. She had strong, conflicting emotions about me when she was young that made her hard to read. I chipped 4 teeth before I stopped thinking the next time she would be different. We walk from the chamber, hand in hand, as if strengthening one another with love, instead of keeping the enemy close. 21. I'm a cowboy on a steel horse I ride. I'm wanted. I ain't afraid of nothing. Never have been. But there are some things that would be plain stupid to do. Got nothing to do with fear. It's all about logic and practicality. You look at the world, assess your odds of survival in light of current circumstances, and choose the course that offers the best chance for whatever it is you want. Like, say, continuing to breathe. I stand outside Chester's, staring up at a street lamp in the scant light of dawn. The sky is one big bank of thunderclouds. It's going to be a dismal, wet day. Happy feckin' May in Dublin. Cold, too. I'm starting to wonder if summer's ever going to get here. Hanging on the side of the street lamp is a poster. At first, when I walked out of the club, I thought We the Feck Care had posted another paper in the few hours I spent cleaning up, then sitting in Riordan's office, doing a great